It's Lake Effect on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Teich. At last report from the Interagency Fire Center, two significant wildfires are continuing to burn in California. They have already charred more than 111,000 acres, and while the threat to life and property is dying down, the effects of California's wildfire season this year will not soon be forgotten.
The fires killed people and had a potentially devastating effect on the Napa Valley region, where many of the country's finest wines are produced from grapes that are grown there. But Lake Effect contributor Ray Pfister joins me now and says the wineries are still open for business.
If you go to any winery's site right now, you're going to hear everybody saying, or you're going to see everybody saying, please come here. This is the time to come. Napa and Sonoma needs the support. They want visitors to come. Wineries certainly have had some damage. There's a couple that did burn down, in particular Ray Signorello, who is an old friend of ours as well as a winemaker we've interviewed a couple of times. His winery burnt to the ground. Another one called White Rock had severe damage. We had originally thought it had burned to the ground, but last I heard that they protected most of it in their caves, most of the wines. I don't know about the physical property where they're at. It's a great winery, too. So a lot of damage. One winery that we were at in April called Paradise Ridge. I'll never forget this place. I'd never been there. We got there, had a stunning view on the ridge of a mountain. On the side, you could see all of Sonoma. We were there for the barrel auction in April. Probably even talked about it with you. And I saw the after pictures, and all it was a slab. It was just so hard to look at it and imagine what these people lost.
The other thing, too, is you think about the loss of the vines, how long it takes for grape vines to get to the point where they're producing.
Well, see, now that's an interesting point. Many of the vines weren't damaged. Some were, some weren't. Vines themselves present almost a firewall to some degree because of the way they're made, the way they lay out. They don't catch fire easily because they are very green. And fires, more often than not, seem to stop right at the edge of many vineyards, not all of them. And I can't tell you what vineyards were damaged, but it's helped in many ways. I was supposed to be there. I was supposed to fly out on Wednesday. This was my regular trip for this time of year. And I was talking to everybody on Tuesday that I had contact with, plus interviews I had lined up for the podcast. And everybody was just saying, you know, you can't go anywhere. You can't get anywhere. I usually stay in the city of Napa with a winemaker friend of mine. And he was okay, come along, but everything was just too close for comfort. So I just decided I'd put it off. So I'll be going out there on November 15th.
Does the smoke and all of that, is that going to affect the wines in the future, the grapes, you know, as they are growing now?
Well, the grapes have mostly been harvested. Okay. In Napa and in Sonoma, they say about 90% as of a week ago was harvested. So I'm going to assume pretty much everything is harvested by now. I was talking to my friend Henrik Paulsen. He's the winemaker for Acumen Wines, which is up on Soda Canyon Road, for those folks who know Napa, up in the mountaintop. And they were testing extensively for smoke taint. Smoke taint, I imagine everybody understands, pretty obviously smoke gets on the grapes, and it taints the flavor of the wine, which is a very bad thing. They're having no detection of it for that particular vineyard right now. All the wineries are checking that. Again, so many grapes were already harvested before the fires got really bad that they were safe. And they also talked about the idea of when many of these grapes are inside the barrels, the CO2 that's in the barrels will push out the smoke taint, so theoretically not affect the juice as it ferments. It all depends. It'll be interesting to see the reviews for this particular vintage, but it's going to be certainly an affected vintage, and it might be down a bit from people who lost their grapes. The real loss came really in Santa Rosa. So many houses, I mean, neighborhoods completely destroyed. I saw pictures. It looked like Hiroshima.
And so looking ahead to next year and the year after, are we likely to see effects, maybe just volume effects, but effects in general from the fires?
You'll probably see some higher prices, sure, just because production costs go up. It's not raising prices for any reason other than simply production, maybe making up for what's lost. Again, I can't tell you how many vineyards have been directly burned. Most of the wineries that I am associated with lost no vineyards. So I think, if anything, it's to be determined right now. But the biggest cry I'm hearing from Napa, other than there are so many charities, you can go to our website or any other website out there and check them out where you can see where you can donate if you'd like. But the wineries are saying, please come here, come visit. Tourism's open. The valley's open. Both valleys. Come visit us, and that's the best way you can help us. And the other thing, too, a lot of wineries have issued special wines that are not inexpensive, that a good portion of those funds for those wines are going to the recovery effort in the valleys.
So we haven't lost the industry.
Oh, heck no. But certainly took a took it to the, you know, to the stomach real bad.
Yeah.
And more than anything, it was frightening. Again, my friend Henrik, living in the city of Napa, Napa's a small town, but, you know, it's a reasonable size. It came close. And to think about that, I mean, he had his suitcase packed. That's a very frightening thought. I mean, think of it, your own home, having to think of leaving everything behind. I mean, you know, you have cats, you have personal items, people who lost everything. It's unbearable.
Well, on happier news, you also went to Italy.
I did.
And I'm very, very envious, and I don't like you. I just want to say that. You know, going right on the record for that.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So obviously you went for wine and food. Do talk about the wine.
This was the Asti DOCG, which is the group that controls the Asti winemakers in that region, who invited me along with 14 other writers, some sommeliers, this whole group to come there to visit, to go to 10 different wineries, to taste their wines, to try their food, to see their property, and to meet the owners.
So it was a very, very difficult assignment.
It was hard. It was difficult. You know, you had to sit on an airplane, then you had to sit on a bus, and then you had to go drink wine and eat food.
All of that rich food.
That was very hard.
Yeah.
Boy, the food. Oh, my God, the food.
I can eat my way through Italy.
Easily.
There's just no question. So tell us, for those of us who are geographically challenged, where is this region in Italy?
This is in the northwestern part of the country. This was Piedmont, the Piedmont region, which is very close to Switzerland, which was the neat part of coming back while we're riding on our bus to Milan, which is where we flew in and out of, to see the Alps. We were like kids with our noses up against the left side of the bus looking at these things, just going, wow.
Yeah, they're big.
They're very big.
They're big.
And they're right there, and they're just all the way along there. So the wineries were extraordinary. The wines, these were primarily Asti, which were sweeter wines. They also had the Asti Secco, which is a drier version there, but not terribly drier. Lower in alcohol, sparkling wines, very tasty. And we also tried some Barolos. We did some Barberas. And just amazing the focus that these folks have on their wines. It is complete and utter passion.
And so are there certain types of wines that you had not really spent any time with before that you said, I'm going to add this to my collection?
Well, I've always liked Barolo, and I've been a Barbera lover for a very long time. But the Asti Secco is new. Again, it's a drier version, not a sweet version of this sparkling wine. And that surprised me. Part of this idea going there was to have a completely open mind, to try these wines and not put my nose in the air about sweet wines, because they're very inexpensive. And this is what Italians drank for years and years and years before the high-end industry grew. And, I found them real good. And, again, the pairing with food was what made the difference.
So what did you pair them, or what did they pair them with?
Oh, gosh, gnocchi. Lots of gnocchi.
Okay. So rich, hearty gnocchi with some sweet wine.
Yeah, that, and there was this little itty-bitty, kind of looked like ravioli. It had a name, I can't remember the name of it, but very tiny raviolis with beef inside them and just a sparse amount of sauce. I could go on for days. It was really good.
We don't tend to think of sweet wines with hearty food, but it sounds like it was a really good mix.
It was a very good mix. These are not aperitifs. These are wines that are meant to go with food. In Europe in general, and specifically in Italy, wine is food, and that's part of the daily meal. That's what they drank instead of water or whatever.
So you're going to go back?
I'm on the way right now. Just kidding. Hopefully,
you already have a ticket.
Hopefully, we're going back next year. I hope, but they were extraordinary people. So nice, so friendly, and so much fun, and great sense of humor.
Ray Pfister, always great to talk with you.
Bonnie, thanks very much.
Ray Pfister owns Fifth Floor Recording Studio in Milwaukee, produces the podcast Life Between the Vines, and is a regular Lake Effect contributor. You can find more coverage of the California wildfires and more at WUWM.com.